Adrian Kendrick.
Okay, thank you. We have the recording going.
Operator.
This call is now being recorded. If you do have any objections, please disconnect at this time. You may begin.
Okay, thank you. Now can I ask for the roll call? Thank you and apologies.
Thank you, Abby. Yes, that's vocal. Philip Shepard?
Yes.
Mike Rodenbach?
Here.
Zaid Jamil?
Here.
Christina Rosette?
Here.
Ochoa? Can't make the call. Tony Holmes?
Yeah.
Tony Harris?
Yes.
Greg Ruth? Mary Wong?
Yes, yes.
Beth and Carlos Souza have excused themselves. They cannot be on the call. Adrian Kinderis? Tim Rui?
Sorry, here. That was Adrian Kinderis, sorry.
Stefan van Schelder?
Yes, I'm here.
Tim Ruiz is here too.
Thank you. Jordi Iparazira also cannot be on the call. Chuck Gomes?
Here.
Edmund Chan?
Here.
Terry Davis sends his apologies as well. He can't be on the call. Avery Doria?
I'm here.
Olga Cavelli?
Present.
And Alan Greenberg, the liaison from the ALAC.
Here.
For staff, we have Dan Halloran, Denise Michel, Marika Koenig, Liz Gasper, Marty Milam, Schwab, Ken Bauer, Robert Hogarth, and Julie Headland. Have I left off anybody?
Okay, thank you.
Okay, before going through the agenda, are there any statements of interest that have been updated or need to be updated at this point? Okay, just like to remind everyone to do that as soon as necessary if you have a change. Okay, in terms of the agenda, just two minor changes. One is in item 8, the word policy. It had been current who is policy requirements for IDNs, and in the last couple of days changed to current who is service requirements, which was considered to be a more appropriate title for the item. And then just in terms of the wiki, just so people know, on the agenda in the wiki, I moved all the motions to the motions page. So just to follow what I've been doing lately. Any questions or other things that need to be added to the agenda? Any amendments? Okay, then we'll proceed with it as it is currently in the wiki. Okay, item 3 is to approve minutes from 29 January 2009. Those are available. Does anybody move those minutes?
I will so move. It's Chuck.
Thank you, Chuck. Is there a second?
Hi, Dan.
Okay, thank you, Olga. Any discussion on those minutes? Okay. All those in favor of accepting those minutes, please say aye.
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 Any opposed, please say nay. Are there any abstentions?
Mike Rosenbaum.
Okay, thank you. Any reason you'd like to add for the amendment?
Have a chance to review Glenn's lovely work.
Okay, thank you. Okay, so they've passed. Item 4 was a motion on users in the GNSO. This was deferred from the council meeting of 4 March. This was a motion that was read out at that time, a motion proposed and made by me and seconded by Chuck that basically acknowledges the work that was done in the... on the board's request relating to user involvement in the GNSO, and the resolution said the GNSO Council endorses the report submitted on behalf of the working group convened by the ALAC and the GNSO Council on User Involvement in the GNSO. So I'd like to open the floor, the queue, to any discussion on this. Is there any discussion? It was basically deferred because people had not had a chance to read and consult constituencies.
Hi, this is Zahid. I just wanted to have a discussion on that, if possible. Be in the queue. Thanks.
Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, I'm just a little. Just wanted to discuss this. This talks about the applicability of individual users, and I'm reading out something from the report that basically says it applies to both the non-commercial and commercial stakeholder groups. And it in the working group recommendation, and I believe there was a lot of contention here from what I understand. Danny Younger's statement at the end, basically disassociating themselves, and I just read that as well. In the working group recommendation, it says that the GNSO constituent stakeholder groups, and this includes commercial stakeholder groups, must be receptive to the involvement buy-in on behalf of users. And then it's not clear. It says it is hard to formulate exactly what this means without knowing how the above organizers will be structured, but it says it presumably means those speaking on behalf of users of any class or group or even of themselves must be allowed to join a stakeholder group or to form a constituency within one. And I'm assuming that obviously definitely then applies to commercial stakeholder groups. And I'm just wondering how that is supposed to work in practice, because does that mean that the commercial house, if you're a stakeholder group, then has to be open to any individual saying that I want to join? What would be the criteria? How would that work out? I just wanted to ask that question.
Okay.
I can try if you'd like it.
Okay, thank you, Alan. I would try if you didn't, but please go.
There was no contention, with the exception of Danny submitting a minority statement. There was general agreement among all of the participants, just for the record. Not knowing what the structure will be of stakeholder groups, for instance, the proposal for the non-commercial stakeholders groups is individuals might be able to join the stakeholder group as such. I believe the commercial stakeholder group says it is a stakeholder group of constituencies, in which case the implication is that there should not be a rule saying that individual users may not participate in a constituency. That doesn't force a constituency to accept individual users, but the rule should not preclude individual users, business users, from forming a constituency or becoming part of another constituency. And that was the intent of the words. I'm not sure if what I said is clear, but I'll give you a chance to speak again.
Hey, did that basically explain it? That means
yes, I'm looking at that now, and I have to be honest, I haven't discussed it with the rest of the people in my constituency, but what I do think is that if that was the intent, that's fine. It's just that it's not clearly coming out that way, and it could be interpreted and read to mean that any individual could join. It doesn't say that he has to be a commercial user per se. It doesn't actually say that in the recommendations, and maybe adding that may help vis-a-vis you in relation to commercial individual users.
I do not think we can actually change that report now. I think we either endorse it or we don't. And so that may be a reason to not endorse it. I don't believe we can actually change the report.
The intent was not to change the rules of what the business constituency or business stakeholder group is for or the non-commercial one, but to simply say that someone should not be precluded from participating purely because they're an individual.
Yeah, I mean, for example,
I think
the non-commercials will still have their rules about what it means to be non-commercial and what it means to be, suitable to any particular constituency.
Aubrey, could I get in the queue?
Please, Chuck.
I'm Philip on the queue as well.
Cool. Okay.
And Christina, please.
So, and the what I wanted to share was is that the real issue here was that in the board recommendations for GNSO improvements, the recommendation was that registrants be allowed in the constituencies, but this particular report goes beyond that and recommends that users who are not registrants would be included in the user category, should be able to be involved in that. And this is just really in response to that one specific issue. And so what we're really endorsing at the high level in this, when we endorse this report, is that yes, the GNSO believes that it's a good idea to include the possibility of users that include registrants but also go beyond registrants in the GNSO.
Okay, so?
Thanks. Just for clarification, where the BC is at the moment, and as far as I'm aware, there are no proposals to change that. We welcome individuals in as much as they are able to demonstrate that they have true commercial intent. And the way that we interpret that commercial intent is that the individual is somehow incorporated either as a company, they may be a sole director, that's fine. They could be in a partnership. They could be in what's called a sole trader in legal legal structures that follow the UK type structures, as it is Australia and many other countries that have inherited those proposals. But there needs to be some sort of demonstration that it is more simply than somebody who considers themselves to be, you know, part-time individual, part-time commercial. And for us, that distinction was always rather important. And I think anything beyond that needs to be looked at rather more carefully.
Yeah, okay. Thank you. Christina?
I just wanted to let everyone know that although I certainly have no objection to what Alan has described as the intent of the report, that I plan to abstain on the basis of, frankly, the fact the wording is unclear.
Okay, thank you. Okay, anyone else wish to comment before I call a vote on it?
This is Denise, if I could get in the queue.
Certainly, Denise. Go ahead, you're in the queue.
Great, thank you. So I think questions that that I have about the report center on the potential duplication between direct user involvement in the GNSO and the advisory committee and its supporting structure. The way I read this report, it would be they're recommending that essentially we could have all of the at-large structures or the recognized user groups represented in the at-large advisory committee and the regional at-large organizations all directly involved in and you know, represented within the GNSO, in addition to being represented as having the separate at-large structure. This raises questions about and connections to other issues such as pending independent reviews and working group reports that recommend that the at-large advisory committee structure have directly elect two additional board seats and the at-large advisory committee's ability, responsibility to directly advise the board on user issues that come up from the GNSO, how that would be coordinated with and not duplicative of the same set of users participating in a consensus development effort within the GNSO. Those are some of the overlaps then that I still have questions about in my mind. Alan, is that something you could clarify?
I could try. I guess I'll put my non-serious comment first as saying we should be so lucky as to have all of the ALS's want to work actively on the on GNSO policy issues. If we ever got to that stage, I'm not sure that would be a bad thing, but I don't think we're anywhere near that. I don't think this is much different from the fact that there are representatives of various constituencies sitting on the SSAC, for instance, which is also a board advisory committee, and that's not perceived as a conflict. That is, if they have an interest and expertise to contribute in one body, that doesn't preclude them being having a voice within the other body. And I think it's something similar to that. The ALAC has an ICANN-wide scope, which far exceeds that of just the GNSO. And it's really not an issue of who you are, in my mind, but where your interests lie. If you are prepared to work within the stakeholder group constituency model to work at depth on GTLD issues, then I don't see the reason, and nor did the rest of the group see the reason, for precluding them participating in the GNSO structure.
Yeah.
Just to be clear then, so the report is recommending that if there's an interest, then all of the at-large, the whole at-large structure remains freestanding and also is duplicated within the GNSO.
No, I don't think that.
That could occur? Is that what the report is saying?
No, I don't believe the report is saying that, if I can add some clarification. I believe the report is saying that if any of the individual ALS were to wish to join a constituency, then they, you know, were not prevented from doing so. However, the entire ALAC structure, or even the structure of a RALO, would not be duplicated. It would be, so certainly there is a theoretical possibility that every single component of the RALOs would join some constituency or other, although they would have a hard time doing so because they're mostly mixed commercial, non-commercial. So the notion that they would actually be able to join either the commercial or the non-commercial is very difficult to fathom. But there certainly was no notion that the entire structure would be duplicated, merely that it was not impossible that some components, some RALO components, some ALS.
ALS, not RALO.
Right, ALS could indeed apply to join, but only if they were purely non-commercial or purely commercial.
Aubrey, could I get in the queue?
Okay, because I missed that in the report. And just to clarify something that Alan said, so the ESAC members, the members who serve on the Security and Stability Advisory Committee, serve as individuals and not representative of specific constituencies, so that analogy only goes so far there. But it's really helpful for you to clarify my questions in the report. Thank you, Alan. And Aubrey?
Yes, thank you. Okay. Well, who was it? Chuck? I didn't write
that. Yes, Chuck.
Yes. I'm fitted for the queue as well, please.
Yeah. I don't recall the report, and it's been a while since I read it, but I don't recall the report focusing on at-large structural organizations, but rather on individual users that may be a member of those organizations. So I'm somewhat concerned that we're talking about the report like it's talking about at-large structures as organizations rather than individual users. Does the report really focus on those structures, or does it focus on individual users? I thought it was just on individual users.
I can try that, Avery, if you want.
Yes, please.
Yeah. I don't think it focused on them, but it didn't preclude them. For instance, one of the groups that we use as our example, which in fact is a group that has submitted an intent to form a constituency, are consumer groups. And consumer groups are not individual users as such, but are there to speak on behalf of users, and we weren't precluding a group such as that joining a constituency or stakeholder group as appropriate.
And I understand that. I mean, it's just like anybody can form a constituency if they want, and if it's an existing at-large organization, they could do that. There's nothing to preclude that, but that's not what this report is about, is it?
No, but for instance, today, under today's structure, an Internet Society chapter who happens to be an ALS could also join the NCUC. It's something in today's structure that can happen, and that was the context in which we were talking about.
And our motion, though, only deals with whether we're going to endorse this report, and I think we need to be careful about focusing on things that go beyond what the report actually deals with.
Thank you. Bill.
Thank you. I must say, I'm rather disappointed that the report has come out at this time and we're now having a discussion about what is essentially a disconnect of understanding about what at large in particular considers it's about in relation to its structures and to its individuals. What I see as a major problem is that at large is recognizing it has such broad interests, it could be commercial and non-commercial, and therefore the division that we came up with some months ago of having a user's house that was divided between commercial and non-commercial is actually an ill-fitting structure for ALEC or at large ALSs or whatever to participate in any rational and coherent way. And I'm therefore very disappointed that that whole debate didn't take place back in the summer in July when ALEC representatives were part and parcel of the founding discussions that we had that we came up with. Okay, this is water under the bridge. I'm expressing disappointment. What I'm afraid it means, although there is some great stuff in this report that we have no problem at all with, I think in the BC certainly, and I'm not sure how my other colleagues in the whole in the rest of the commercial stakeholders group feel about it, but I'm afraid we're going to be obliged to vote against this report simply because that disconnect is a major and significant unresolved issue that to some extent fundamentally drives a truck through the whole consensus process we've reached in the reform structure.
Could I ask a clarifying question there, Aubrey?
Please.
Philip, what are you referring to as the unresolved issue?
Well, what I'm saying is that I am detecting ALAC's problem with retrofitting them into either commercial or non-commercial categories, and they're basically saying, well, we'd like to go anywhere.
ALAC has no such problem.
Well, the problem seems to exist because you seem to be suggesting that individuals should be able to participate in the commercial stakeholders group house as individuals, and we have a problem with that, and that problem was not previously communicated to us.
Avery, can I get in, Stefan?
Could I get in?
Yes, Stefan, and then Alan again. Go ahead, Stefan.
Oh, sorry. I was just thinking about Philip's comments and the general misunderstanding that this seems to be around this point. Wouldn't we be better advised taking a bit more time on this motion? Just a suggestion.
Well, we've already delayed it by 3 weeks, and we are just talking about endorsing a report, but, you know, certainly it's something to be considered. Alan?
I guess I have a problem with being ALEC being characterized as having a problem with the commercial and non-commercial structure. ALSs, in general, are non-commercial. There may be commercial components to them, but to a large extent, they are, in fact, non-commercial. I don't think that we have said anything much stronger than what Philip said already, that the current business constituency, and we're not limiting it to that, but the current one, will already allow individuals in with the reasonable credentials that they are, in fact, business-oriented. I guess I don't see what the problem is, but it's not my problem, I guess.
No, well, the only problem is that is not clear in the report because of its current wording. So if we're being asked to endorse the report in its current text, we must vote against it, even if your intent is different.
Okay.
Well,
I think that makes sense.
I believe there was a business constituency participant in the process, but I would suggest if there's a problem in particular wording or needing clarification, that those on council who want to suggest such a wording could propose a clarification to us, or how they interpret it.
And Mark, can I get with you?
Excuse me,
I'm here. Mike Rodenbaugh?
Yeah, please, Mike.
This is Zaid. Can I get in the seat? Thanks.
Okay, go ahead, please.
So I'm just trying to understand. I mean, this issue just frankly hasn't really been high on the BC's radar yet. And, you know, I think that's understandable given the 13 ongoing public comment periods at the moment. So I'm trying to figure out what is the downside of either abstaining or voting no. on endorsing this report. And I'm also really not in favor of council getting reports that we're supposed to basically give thumbs up or thumbs down on. That's just, I don't see that not as our job. It's kind of a rubber stamp authority. And now this is the second time in recent months we've been asked to do that.
Well,
so let's decide if we vote no or abstain and delay this further.
Aubrey, can I get in the queue, please?
Yeah, I had Christina. I had somebody before Christina.
I think it was Adrian, maybe?
Huh?
Adrian, maybe?
Adrian. Okay, I could. I have trouble hearing some people. Okay, Adrian and then Christina.
Thanks to Christina, but no, it wasn't me.
Oh, okay. Well, if no one admits to
it was Zahid.
Zahid, go ahead.
Okay.
Hi. Thanks. Okay, my question is just a clarification. I'm reading this from recommendation one. It presumably means that those speaking on behalf of users of any class or group or even of themselves must be allowed to join a stakeholder group or to form a constituency within one. Just want to get, what is the meaning of any class? Does that mean you may not be a commercial individual or commercial entity to actually then qualify to create a constituency in a commercial stakeholder group?
No, I don't think it says that at all. I think that the categories that divide up, I mean, we have a fairly complete categorization that one is either a contracted party or not, and then among the non, they are either commercial or not. And so within their appropriate category, this report says that any person within their category. And as we, you know, so I don't think it is saying in any respect that a non-commercial person must be allowed to join a commercial constituency.
Yeah, my query is just for the use of the word users of any class or group.
Right, but that means if you're a commercial user, you need to be able to join a commercial constituency of some sort or to form one.
Okay.
That you can't be barred simply because you're a user and not a registrant, for example. Okay, I had Christina, and then I'd like to call the vote on it because, as people say, this is not... Oh, on the rubber stamp thing, I did want to mention that this group was open to... You know, all of the GNSO, so it's not like we're rubber stamping something. It's a joint group between ALAC and GNSO, and this is the report coming out of it.
This is Tim. Can I make a comment after Christine before the vote?
And I'm sorry, this is Mary. Can I just jump in real quick after Tim?
Sure, of course.
And Chuck, too, please.
Okay, go ahead, Christina.
You know, given that it sounds as if the 3BC reps will vote against this, then I will abstain, which is essentially a no vote. And given that I also think that this is probably the type of report that it was hoped would be endorsed unanimously, I would instead suggest that perhaps we not vote and explore the possibility with the working group whether it is possible to amend the language in the recommendation that we have a problem with.
Okay, thank you. Okay, Ken?
Did you get Denise, too, in there?
Oh, I have Denise. Okay, no, I didn't. I'm having trouble with names today. Okay, who was after Christine? I had Mary, then Chuck, then Denise.
Yeah, I'm not.
Tim.
Denise.
Tim.
Okay, Tim, please.
Yeah. Well, I guess maybe Christina, I think, may have the better idea, honestly. I mean, I'm a little confused at this point myself. I'm not sure how I'll vote. I don't know what my constituent fellows will do, but I'm not clear at this point. I wonder if we have to move on this vote today, could we perhaps amend the motion to not be so, definitive about endorsing the report, maybe even making the statement that, the council doesn't necessarily agree, but, in the interest of moving it forward, that we've decided to accept the report and forward it to the board.
Well, it's not up to us to forward it. Basically, it's already been forwarded to the board. And the board has basically been asked to change their original recommendation that the groups be limited to registrants to allow users, and this report was saying, yes, we encourage that change, and I think if we don't endorse the report, then, you know, we don't endorse the report. It's no biggie. It just doesn't have GNSO endorsement, and the board will take it, you know, at its face
value. Okay, so there may not be, so there isn't really any opportunity to change it then either, so delaying a vote probably doesn't make sense.
I think the report has already been forwarded to the board.
Avery, can I get in the queue with Alan?
Okay. Sure, Alan, I've got Mary, Chuck, Denise, Alan.
Okay, is it my turn now? It's Mary.
Yes, go ahead, Mary.
Okay, just real quick, to endorse what Alan said earlier, I think the representatives from the NCUC who are on the working group approached this from a couple of aspects. One, that we're fully supportive of the change from registrants to users because we think that's more broad-based. Secondly, that the effort on the restructuring should be non-duplicative of the ALAC and its structures, while at the same time ensuring participation and not setting up artificial barriers to participation by as many users as possible. So I just wanted to put that in there.
Okay, thank you. In fact, I think the report actually says a lot of that. Chuck.
Yes, and Denise can correct me if I'm wrong on this, or and so can anybody else, but it seems to me, as I said in part at least before, it's that the main question, and Mary just hit on it, is whether the GNSO should involve individual registrants only or a broader category of individual users, which includes registrants. And if that's correct, if that's the main question that the board was really asking, and that's what I recall, we could easily modify the motion, and whether we do it today or next time, I'm not big on that, but like Tim suggested, and say the GNSL Council supports the recommendation that individual users be involved in GNSO. That's the recommendation that's in the report, and we don't necessarily have to endorse the whole report. So maybe Denise can see whether I'm on track there or not, since she's, I think, up next.
Okay, Denise.
Thanks. I actually wasn't in the queue, but I'm happy to
put in the queue.
So I think what the board is left with deciding on is not the general statement of whether or not users should be involved in the GNSO, but how to do that, achieve that in a way that doesn't result in overlapping ICANN structures or ICANN structures that are duplicative, or ICANN constituencies that are participating as GNSO constituencies and participating in the GNSO elections to seat two board members and to participate in the consensus development process within the GNSO, and then doing the same thing in terms of seating board members potentially through the at-large committee and then providing separate advice to the board on the GNSO. So questions are raised on whether, how do you involve users in a way that is productive and not confusing for user groups and is not duplicative in some of these areas with the freestanding at-large structure. So it's the how that the board was seeking further guidance on. Really? Did I answer your question, Chuck?
I guess the next question, and we don't have to answer this now, but is does the report really, I need to go back and look at the report, see whether the report really answers that question.
Philip here. Chuck, I have exactly the same response now that I've heard Denise formulate what the board's question was. I'm not at all convinced this report gets the essence of that. I think it's a much more fundamental question that needs much greater thinking through. Within GNSO relevance, it's all a question of standing. You know, why are you involved in that? Why do you wish to be part of GNSO policy thinking? Is it because of a certain standing in relation to the ownership of the domain name, etc., or does it go beyond that? And these are much more fundamental questions which seem to be different to the text of the report in front of me.
Okay, thank you. Alan, you were done. I'd like to put myself in after Alan.
Part of what I was going to say was already somewhat addressed by Denise, but since it has been brought up several times today, I'll address it. On the issue of registrant versus user, all the original GNSO restructuring committee and this one is saying is don't change what is current today. Currently, the term user is used in both commercial and non-commercial constituencies, and we are suggesting that it not be changed to registrant, that is, it be left alone. In terms of endorsing the report, as I read the board request, they asked for a group to be formed of representatives of various groups, commercial, GNSO, ALAC, constituencies in formation who don't necessarily have a home anywhere, to come up with a statement. I do not believe it required endorsement from the GNSO or the ALAC. On the other hand, the GNSO explicitly not endorsing it does send a message. And I suggest the GNSO think about that in deciding how to go ahead from this point.
Okay, and
can I get in the queue?
Excuse me?
This is Zahid. Can I get in the queue?
Certainly. Okay, you're right after me, and then I'd like to end this one. Because we've gone way over our time on it. Okay, two things. One is, it's not quite true that everyone in both committees supported the notion of user versus registrant. I've gone back with that suggested, but I've always preferred the wording that the board put forward of focusing on registrant.
Avery, you've gotten completely fuzzy.
Okay. Basically, I've always supported the board wording of registrants, but the council and the working group and all those where I was in a minority of one, I basically left that alone. But just before we say that everyone supports it, I wanted to put that note in. I think at this point, it's probably better to just let the matter drop and not have a divided or even a losing vote on endorsing it. And as Alan says, there was no requirement for the GNSO to endorse it. It certainly would have strengthened that report to have the GNSO endorse it. But at this point, I'm quite willing to withdraw the motion, having made it. So, and just move on. Zahid.
Hi. There was some discussion I think Denise made about the board resolution, etc. When I read the board resolution of the 11th of December 2008, it basically talks about the GNSO community work with ALAC, etc. Jointly develop a recommendation for composition of organizations, etc. of a non-commercial stakeholder group, and talks about basically non-commercial communities and the interests of individual internet users within that. And when I see this thing then extended in this report to commercial users, I think, in my view at least, it's gone beyond the scope of what the board maybe had resolved. That's just the view. As a possibility of maybe trying to get clarification on this, would it be possible, and is this an idea to throw out there, have a motion which would be a compromise, saying, okay, we clarify that means that commercial individual users would have access to the commercial, you know, CBUC, etc., as long as they are bona fide a commercial entity, etc., some language that could clarify. And then that could be the motion that goes along.
It's quite possible for someone to put together a motion on that at this point. I think I'm withdrawing this motion and would like to move on in the agenda, unless there's some objection.
Avery, no objection at all. I think that's a good course of action, but I think it would be useful that the board is aware that we have discussed this and have this quiet with this report, and leave it at that, because I think otherwise,
yes,
the board may presume that we have endorsed it, not expecting an endorsement, but it's come from a joint GNSO ALAC group, and the fact that
we would have to have a motion of disquiet.
No. You could report on precisely what had happened on the meeting without
I'm sure the staff will.
Well, then let the show instruct staff to do so, please.
That would require a motion.
No, would it?
I think if the GNSO wants to instruct staff,
I'm Well, let me ask an open question of Denise. Will you report to the board what this discussion has been about?
Absolutely.
Thank you very much.
And
that's fine. That's different than a GNSO instruction to report to the board that. And so if they're going to report to it, I think that's fine. We'll just leave it there. Okay. That one was going to be easy. item 5 was the Interregister Transfer Policy, Part A, Policy Development Process, PDP. There was a motion on that, which was not made by anyone. It was put forward by the working group with the hope that someone in the council who was also on the working group or perhaps the liaison to it would speak to it. And so, Mike, I'm wondering if you would like to take us through this. I doubt we're ready to vote on it today, but I'm wondering if you could walk us through it. Or would you prefer that someone from the staff do it?
Wait, Aubrey, I'm sorry. I was just going through airport security.
Perhaps then it is better that someone in the staff do it. We're up to item 5, which is the Interregister Transfer Policy, Part A, Policy Development Process, PDP.
Yes,
and the motion they put forward that has not been moved or seconded formally by anyone yet, as far as I can tell, unless I missed that. And I don't believe that we'll be ready to vote on it today, though I may be wrong, but I was wondering if either you or someone from the staff would walk us through the motion and the recommendation.
Oh, I nominate Marika for that.
Marika, is that fine with you?
Yeah, that's fine.
Thank you.
So basically the IRTP Part A looked at three different issues. First, the potential exchange of registrant email information between registrars. Secondly, the potential for including forms of electronic authentication to verify transfer requests and avoid spoofing. And thirdly, to consider whether the IRTP should include provisions for partial bulk transfers between registrars. The group provided an update to the council in Mexico City, and I'd say not much has changed since then. So just going through the motion, the group has published its final report, which came out last week, and I think has been posted on the GNSO website. So basically the group recommends the council to, on the first issue, the potential exchange of registrant email information between registrars, to carry out an assessment of whether IRIS would be a viable option for the exchange of registrant email address data between registrars, and conduct an analysis of IRIS's costs, time of implementation, and appropriateness for IRTP purposes. And as you will see as well in the report, this clearly does not include any WHOIS considerations or replacement of WHOIS considerations. And secondly, the group should suggest to the GNSO Council for their future IRTP working groups to consider the appropriateness of a policy change that would prevent a registrant from reversing a transfer after it has been completed and authorized by the admin contact. And thirdly, the group recommends the GNSO Council to clarify that the current bulk transfer provisions also apply to bulk transfers of domain names in only one GTLD. So that's in short what the motion is about.
Okay, thanks. Am I correct in stating that this motion hasn't actually been made by anyone in the council, and ask at this point whether there is somebody that moved it and seconded it?
Yes, I will make the motion. I should have done that by now.
Okay, so Mike makes the motion, and is there a seconder? Okay, not at this point. Okay.
So
I guess it's going to require a bit more conversation before we're ready for a vote on it, especially since we don't have a seconder on it yet.
I guess, Aubrey, we need a second so we can discuss it. Is that right?
Well, we can ask clarifying questions about it, but I would certainly hold it until the next meeting. Well, and yes, we certainly need a second before we can, you know, seriously get into discussing pre-vote. But
okay,
course,
I will second it.
This is Tim.
We can discuss it. I am actually not in favor of voting on it at this time, but I'll second it so that we can have discussion on it.
Okay.
And Avery, this is Marika. I would also be happy if the council would like that on the next meeting to provide a brief overview of what actually is in the final report. if that's something people would like to see.
Okay, thank you. So are there any questions or clarifications on this at the moment?
I want to discuss it, but I don't have a clarification. I don't need a clarification. Okay. First of all, I did some checking on myself, on my own with some of our technical people, and certainly IRIS could be used to exchange registrant contact information without making that information public. So technically that's possible. Now the motion says whether it's a viable option, so the word viable is critical there, I suppose. I suspect that doing an evaluation of the cost of implementing IRIS would be a pretty big effort. And whether we want to suggest doing that on for this one purpose is a legitimate question. I'm not opposed to that, but I think that I'd probably like to hear more from the working group with regard to whether they think it's worth having staff do that kind of an analysis just for this one purpose. Some other issues in the report. The whole idea of the report suggesting that working groups should consider the appropriateness of a policy change that would prevent a registrant from reversing a transfer after it has been completed and authorized by the admin contact. That to me, I really need more information. I asked a question in Mexico in this regard as well. It sure seems like that would facilitate domain name hijacking, but maybe I'm missing something there. I know the report does talk about there's still the option for the registrant to do something in a certain time period and so forth, but that would be a real concern. I guess my general comment is that I think the motion needs some tweaking, because I think we already know that IRIS could be used for this option. Now, if we want to ask the question whether it's viable and do a full-blown cost analysis, I'm not opposed to that, but I want to raise the issue for consideration. I'll leave it at that, Aubrey.
Okay, thanks. Does anyone else like to speak on it at this time? This will be on the next agenda. Okay, then thank you. I'll hold this off until the next agenda. Hopefully we can discuss some of the particulars on the list in the meantime. And Marisa, I think I'll take you up on the offer to talk through the report, and perhaps if you can come up with, you know, some of the if the working group, which I know is still working, could come up with some of the answers, and if it's reasonable, perhaps we would like to invite the chair of the group to join us at the meeting next time for part of this discussion. Would there be any objection to inviting Paul to join us for the discussion? No objection.
Well, Aubrey, Mike, I mean, I'd really prefer, I think the working group would prefer that we, you know, try to, we can certainly go back and try to answer some of the questions that have been raised specifically, but we'd love to accomplish all this on the list so this is, you know, prepared for a final discussion and vote at the next meeting.
Okay, I didn't quite understand what you were saying. I apologize. If others understood it, I think. But I didn't understand what the working group would prefer.
I'm sorry, I'm in an airport.
Yeah, I understand.
I'm suggesting that the working group would like to try to wrap this up, answer the questions on the list, and in our call, so this is all queued up for final discussion and vote at the next council meeting. So
okay.
We can move on.
Okay, that sounds good. And does that respond to whether we have Paul there or not?
Whether
you think it's not necessary to invite him to the meeting?
No, I hope not.
Okay,
I hope
fine.
That we can address these issues, and if anybody else has questions about the report, let's address those on the list so we can address them in the working group.
Okay.
And have them resolved before the next council call.
Okay, thank you. Anyone else wish to comment before I move on? Okay. In which case, then move on to item 6, which was the Registrar Accreditation Agreement motion action item. Did I skip something? No, I didn't. This is really could be a brief item. the motion that we took and voted and approved talked about within 30 days of board approval, the set of amendments, approving the set of amendments, representatives from the GNSO would start work, and there would be a draft charter completed for further discussions and discussions on the registered rights charter and on further amendments to the RAA. Now, the board has not considered this yet. They will be doing so soon, I assume, in their next meeting, but the next meeting isn't until April, right around the time of our next meeting, if I understand correctly. So this point is really on here as a, just because they haven't done it yet does not mean that we shouldn't start considering getting ourselves in motion. And I wanted to open up that for discussion if there was any issue about, getting that started. At one point, it was possible that we would have already had their decision, but we do not have their decision at the moment. So I'd like to open the queue on item 6.
Happy, this is Mary. Can I get in the queue?
Certainly, Mary.
And Alan.
And Alan. Anyone else? Okay, go ahead, Mary.
Okay, just for information, and I don't know if Alan and I were going to say more or less the same thing, so Alan, feel free to supplement, that there's already members within NCEC and ALAC who have expressed an interest in not just working together, but working with the other GNSO reps to form the drafting team, to set up a workspace and a mailing list and so forth. So there's a bunch of people who are basically chomping at the bit to move forward with this.
Okay, thank you. And so that's probably the beginning of a team to start putting together a charter. Alan?
Yeah, I wasn't part of the group that drafted the original this motion, but I suspect that there was not a belief that there was going to be a six-week delay before board approval. And the dates were set assuming that the work was going to start moderately soon. As it stands now, the board won't approve at best till sometime in April, which puts the 30-day delay sometime into May, just prior to people starting to get very busy with Sydney. So I would support Mary's statement and what you were implying, that we should get a drafting team or whatever it is going sooner rather than later and not wait for the 30-day period to elapse.
Okay. Thanks.
This is Tim.
Okay.
This is I fully support Mary and Alan's comments.
Okay. Thank you. Tim.
Yeah, I support him as well. I think it's the most reasonable way forward.
Okay. So we basically have two different groups here, one of which is a group to draft a registered rights charter, which is definitely a GNSO community and ALS joint group. And the other is to come up with a drafting team, discuss further amendments to the RAA. So, and those are two different groups. So I'd like to suggest at this point that Glenn begin the work of organizing those and that all constituencies basically, come up with people that will work in those, and that as a thing, I will also contact the chair of ALAC, letting her know that we're doing those, so that if there are ALAC members that wish to, we need to talk about how the representatives from GNSO and community and ALAC identified to participate in that charter, so start looking into that with her.
This is Denise. Can I get in the queue?
Yes, Denise. Go ahead. You're at the top of the queue.
I'd like to raise a question about whether these groups need to be or should be conducted as separate groups.
Okay.
It would be useful to get some council discussion guidance on that. It seems to me that based on some conversations that occurred within the at-large community in Mexico City, some members of that community are taking a rather expansive view of what might be in a registrant rights charter, and some of the items they discussed would, I think, some people in the GNSO would include in, not in a registrant rights charter, but in an RAA. follow-up amendment package, and so I think there's some utility in having one group addressing this so issues could be addressed in a holistic fashion.
Okay, that certainly in terms of people's time may also make sense. Are there any comments on that, especially from those that have spoken already, like Mary talking about, you know, the interest in, and Alan also that? What you know, do people think? Is it one group?
Yeah, it's Alan.
Alan?
I appreciate the potential problems that Denise mentioned, and I agree that some of the suggestions of what should be in a Charter of Rights, in fact, are major actions in GNSO policy, and perhaps much more than that. And I think there's going to have to be some significant understanding of what we can put in a Charter of Rights and what must be done through the formal PDP process or through formal negotiations. And I think there needs to be a level set prior to our beginning any of these things on where those boundaries are. However, that being said, I really think this is two groups because I think their focus is quite different.
This is Mary, and I just want to endorse what Alan said. I can't speak for the people who have volunteered, self-identified as to which team they want to be, but my sense is that the perception is that it is two separate groups, and it may be that as part of the process going forward, there needs to be some understanding or coordination between the two, but I too would think that there are two groups.
This is Denise, if I could get in the queue.
Yes, please. You're at the top of the queue.
So I mean, I wasn't raising this as a problem, actually. I was raising this as an opportunity. I know that there are also at-large members who are interested in issues that will be addressed as part of an RA amendment package. So I'm raising this as a request to, dig a little deeper and question the assumptions that they need to be or should be two different groups and think about how these processes would go forward and the most efficient way of handling this whole set of issues related to the RAA. And I'm also, I have to say, concerned about the workload overall of the community. We've got over 13 separate groups, committees, running at this point, each with, 3 to 10 different work items. And of course we also have the new trademark group and other work that's going forward with the applicant guidebook, geographic regions, and on. So I think there's also a workload issue in creating two additional groups instead of one.
Although if one group has to do 2S group work or two groups have to do 1S work each, it's probably about the same amount of work. But I do take your point.
Aubrey, this is Margie. Can I be in the queue also?
Please. Anyone else? Okay, go ahead, Mark.
Sure. I understand there was an ALAC call earlier in the week where this was discussed, and my what I heard back was that they were thinking it would be more efficient to have it be one group, not two groups, because of what Denise was mentioning earlier, the fact that some of the rights issues may be something that needs to get built into as amendments.
Okay, thank you.
This is Tim. Can I get in the queue?
Yes, Tim.
I guess I didn't, and maybe I'm misunderstanding, but I didn't envision that the charter would result in potential RRA changes, or that the charter was to make sure that the registrants were aware of what their existing rights are, and that parallel to that, there's a discussion going on about potential further changes to the RAA. But I don't think there was any intention on registrar's part that we had two different processes going on that could result in RAA changes. And I don't believe that that's the intent of the RAA amendment either.
So another
Charter of Rights is definitely needed and can be produced, I think, in fairly short order. And it may identify areas that need further policy work, but I don't think it in of itself is intended to be a policy effort.
Aubrey, please add Chuck to the queue.
And Alan.
Chuck. And Philip.
Chuck, Alan, Philip. Thank you. Go ahead, Chuck.
I think one of the dangers of combining the two is that that's exactly what happens in people's minds. They the rights document, which is an information document, would too easily be moved into a RAA change task, and I think that's not a good idea.
Okay, thank you. Alan?
I support both what Chuck said and what Tim just said. There's certainly an inclination when you start using the term Charter of Rights or Bill of Rights to want to put into it all of the things that you want to be rights. But we're not forming a new country with a blank slate here. We're describing an ongoing process. And I think at best what we can put in a Charter of Rights is what the rights are, not what we want them to be. And as I said, I think there's a level set that needs to be done to make sure that all people are on the same wavelength.
Okay. Thank you, Philip.
Yeah, I'm slightly confused, like others perhaps, about the descriptive charter. If we're talking about merely a list of existing rights that exist within the RAAs and apply to registrants, I see no reason to involve the GNSO community and the AVAC in drafting that. I see a request going to the registrar constituency to say, come on guys, this is your daily bread and butter, tell us what the list is of existing rights. If it's different to that, then we need to be clear what that difference is. If there is a gap analysis to be done between the list of existing rights and a perception that some things that people thought were rights or applied do not actually apply, then to my mind, that is a discovery that would be useful to know, and that would in turn inform the nature of changes that may or may not be requested. Otherwise, I don't see the point of the exercise.
Actually, that seems like a really good way to start the process on the Registrant Rights Charter, is to get the registrars to basically write down that list that you suggest.
Yeah,
that could be an excellent way to start it all.
Should I be in the queue, Alan?
Is that Alan?
Yeah,
Alan.
I'll give two small examples that of things that I believe should be there. I challenge you to go to most registrars' or resellers' websites and find the rules for how you transfer a domain away from them. They all have big prominent tabs on how to transfer. That's how to transfer in. To find out how to transfer something away is not clear. To find out what the, to go on to the next item, the post-expiration process and rules are, without reading the fine print in a contract which might change day to day, is virtually impossible. I think those are the kinds of things that we were talking about. That is, make sure that registrants can find out what is going on, know what their rights are, and don't have to go into legal documents to find them out.
What I
That's the kind of example that I thought we were talking about.
What I'd like to suggest at this point, and come back to this again at the next meeting, is to form one group that is basically starting the work, and hopefully within a week or two we can tell whether it needs to be 2 weeks. In other words, so going to the registrars and asking for the list and so on. Does anyone object to us starting with one group, and if it needs to be split into two within a short amount of time because, you know, the work is such that it's divided, it does. But starting one group at the moment to sort of get some clarity on this issue.
I would prefer if it was one group to scope the ground
and
then make a decision as opposed to taking action to split it.
Okay. Better wording. Thank you.
Yeah, the mission of this group that you're starting needs to be well defined and with a wrap around it so that it doesn't easily expand beyond that.
Right, okay, I'll try and write
this is Tim. Can I make a comment?
Yes, sir.
I can support that. I think, though, that all I think we want to be careful of is that we don't bog down the creation of this charter with everything else. So, you know, and I fully agree with Philip. If things are identified that need to be addressed or that aren't clear or that we find we don't that weren't completely clearly understood, or there's not an agreement on it, then that needs to move on to another process, maybe to this group's next task, which would be the RAA discussion or policy or whatever. But I don't want to see but that should be quickly moved on. I don't want to see the charter get bogged down with those kinds of issues. But we need to get it created and get it out there. It can be modified as we iron out those disagreements or those issues or other things we identify. So that's all I caution against.
So I'll try and write a description up and put it on the list, and then we can discuss it, of what exactly a few people will do over the next couple of weeks. Get this clarified, and then we can, you know, take those words, and I don't want to try and craft that during this conversation.
Avery Philip, if I might just add, I think that's great, and please let me make the attempt. I think Alan's example of the transferring away from the registrar was quite an interesting example, actually, because it strikes me that the existing right would say a registrar will have a means of transferring a name away, and a charter may say something like, would we be describing the visibility and the accessibility of that option to transfer away, and to my mind, that's where things will be different. So it's all to do with like writing advertising codes as standards, just respectable codes as advertising standards. That it's a function of the existence of something, but also its accessibility and visibility, and I think that may be the sort of things that come out of our Edison's Rights Charter discussion.
Okay. Thank you. Okay, I'm going to move on now to 7, but I recommend that we keep talking about this on the list. One of the things that is important with a number of things that we have to do is that we do as much as possible on the list before the meetings. The next thing we have is another thing that I also believe will not be ready for a vote today, and that's the post-expiration domain name recovery policy development process decision. And Alan has been working with the group. I attended one out of two meetings that the group had. Just so the motion had a mover, I put my name on it. It has not been seconded, and nor is it ready to be voted on at this time. But I wanted to ask Alan to basically introduce it and describe, if that's okay, Alan. Otherwise, I could ask Marika, whichever.
I'll start, and then I might give it over to Marika.
Okay.
In the first meeting, the group did have a significant discussion on whether we want to go immediately to a PDP or whether we felt some other investigative type work was required, and there was mention in the issues report of other studies. The group came to the consensus pretty quickly, supported by staff, that there was no real reason to have as a separate process some initial studies, that it made more sense to initiate the PDP, and if the PDP group felt that further work needed to be done, that could be done as part of the PDP process. As a result, we ended up drafting the motion that sits on the table today, which essentially takes the recommendations verbatim from the issues report with one change and recommends that we initiate a PDP with those items within the scope. The one change was suggested in the issues report, and that is the concept of transferring a domain during the RGP. The issues report mentioned might better fit in the IRTPC PDP when it gets done. We modify that slightly to say that the present PDP should include consideration of whether a transfer at that point is necessary, needed, or advisable, and if it was, it leaves it to IRTPC to look at the logistics and mechanics of it, which end up getting somewhat complex, and there was no reason for this PDP group to have to learn that entire rule book. So the recommendation is that we proceed to an issues report following the specific items that are
that to a PDP following the specific items that were mentioned in the issues report, with the modification on the item of our transfer during RGP.
Okay.
Marika wants to fill that out.
Marika, did you want to add anything before I open up the queue?
No, not really. Just maybe one thing to mention to Alan, that on the IRTP group is currently discussing which of the issues to take next, and there is actually discussion of putting B and C together, which might mean that happens quicker than expected. So that's something that
could be.
Might need to be considered, but I guess that would be as well for a next call probably.
Right, and I don't see how that would be necessarily a problem. If they're looking at this as a possible part of C, but anyhow.
Certainly, the transverging RGP was not a major part of this overall issue, and if that ends up dropping by the wayside because of the timing of these two groups, I don't think anyone is going to make a major problem out of that. But
I guess it would be an issue that the group
that's,
would have
the, that's the worst-case scenario. So I wouldn't delay this because of that.
Okay, any clarifying questions or initial comments? As I say, this will be on our next discussion, and hopefully we can discuss it on the list before then.
I wouldn't have any trouble seconding the motion right now.
Okay, thank you, Chuck. I'll mark you as seconded. Anyone else want to discuss it at the moment, or do we take it online? We take it online, and it'll show up on the next agenda, hopefully for voting. In fact, definitely for voting. It does. We do have the PDP obligation of a vote, and so therefore, and that's one of the reasons why I made the motion, since I kind of owe the motion on anything. Okay, any more comments on that before moving on? Okay, thank you, Alan. The next thing we had was item 8, current WHOIS service requirements for IDN list.
So when we were in Mexico, you recall that we spent a little time, aside from voting on the 6 study areas, talking a little bit about the previous SAC reports on directory services and WHOIS and the WHOIS protocol in the context of a replacement for WHOIS. And we also talked a little bit about this upcoming SAC report that takes a look at usage and display of WHOIS contact information and the increasing presence of non-ASCII text in WHOIS contact information and what the implications of that might be over the long term. So this is really, I think, a placeholder follow-up from that conversation or initial discussion. We've also had some previous discussions on the 2 previous SAC reports to follow up as a group to talk about next steps, if any. I don't have anything further to present at this point, but I think it's a placeholder for further council discussion. There, in the SAC report that I guess hasn't quite been released yet, there is this recommendation, for example, for a workshop on the topic, and that's something that we agreed we might discuss as an after-action kind of thing, or other possible activities as well.
Okay. I'd like to take a cue if anyone wants to discuss it. How we proceed. And no further comments at this point?
Chuck will comment.
Okay, Chuck.
Yeah, I just think this is an area that we can't keep putting off, that we do need to start looking at this particular area, and not in light of all of the controversial policy issues. Those obviously will have to be dealt with somewhere, but the current WHOIS system is very limited, archaic really, and it doesn't provide the flexibility for handling IDNs well. It doesn't include a lot of other possibilities with regard to protecting privacy and so forth. So at some point, we need to get moving on this. I don't have a simple answer as to how we do that, but I do think for us to be responsible as a council, that we need to get something moving here, and we need to think about how to do that.
So it's Liz. I mean, one place that we have talked about it also is in the context of the WHOIS studies, and there is one study that we are that's on the list of six that we're pursuing costs and feasibility on that at least takes one cut at looking at the use of non-ASCII character sets in WHOIS records. It's not related to the broader question of a replacement, but looks at client-side tools and that may today not have the capability of reading both ASCII and non-ASCII characters, and doing an examination, sort of a technical examination of how many different clients, et cetera, are out there and what the implications might be there. So that's, one first step examining that issue more closely. And given the resource limitations that exist today, that might be, make sense to take a look at what it would take to do that study in the context of the other studies and proceed in that context. But I did want to mention that one of those study areas does deal, in a sense, with this issue.
And Aubrey, maybe a question we need to get answered is maybe staff can help us here. In terms of, and not right now, but I mean in the near term. Obviously, we're dealing with a cross here between technical issues and policy issues. How, in fact, what is the right approach to consider moving to, for example, the IRIS protocol? Is that a policy development process that we need to go through? Or is it not? I frankly don't know, but I do believe that the question needs to be asked, and we need to find out what is the appropriate way to deal with that.
If I can put myself in the queue before I build more of a queue, if anyone wants in it, I think we do have a funny situation here in that, properly speaking, this is not a policy decision at the moment. What there are a set of policies that have defined a body of requirements and a technical approach, and I would think, and one of the things someone else in the group is usually saying, that someone in the staff could actually do an analysis of the various requirements that currently exist for the WHOIS service, including IDN, and get those written down, and then people like us, people like SAC, people like others in the community could look at that set of requirements and say, yep, that set of requirements captures the things that we think need to be done. Or we might look at it and say, there are some policy issues that set of requirements would not cover, so we would discuss additional requirements. And only once we set that set of requirements would it be reasonable to ask the question, is IRIS the right tool? At this point, to say, how do we move to IRIS, puts the solution before the requirement. But that's just sort of a software engineering sort of saying, we've got the requirements. The staff, I assume, knows the requirements. If they were to take all the policies that currently exist, and all the possible policies that might need to be substantiated in a protocol, what are the requirements for a tool that does it? Can the WHOIS tool currently do it? Probably not. If not, then we find out what tool could. And now I've taken myself off the soapbox. Does anyone else want to comment?
Edmund,
yes. Anyone else? Go ahead, Edmund.
Yeah, I just want to sort of get a clarification on the taking aside the IRIS issue on specifically on IDN. Is there any particular? I wasn't clear, including staff and Chuck's comment, is whether the council or the GNSO in general needs to take a look at the particular issue now, or are we waiting for staff to produce those reports yet? Not about the IRIS, but the IDN part.
Any answers?
I don't think I understand your question, Edwin.
The question is whether, on the issue of the IDN side, is there anything the council or the GNSO should be doing, or are we first waiting for the studies from staff?
Well, the studies, if we elect to do them once we have cost estimates and feasibility estimates, certainly will be helpful. But if we wait until then, we're probably talking about the end of the year at best, and we'll have even more expansion of IDN shortly thereafter, probably. And so I think waiting until we have that information isn't a very good approach on this. I actually like Aubrey's suggestion of if staff thinks it's feasible to actually let's get what we think the requirements are for a directory services of some sort down. And that gives us the basis for moving forward.
And this is Denise, if I could get in the queue.
Yes, Denise, I think you're at the top of the queue. Anyone else wish to be in the queue? Go ahead, Denise.
I don't know if it is feasible, if that was a question. It would be helpful to get in writing outline of what you're asking staff to do, and that would allow me to then respond to it.
So what I will do is, since I'm the one that got on the soapbox, I will write down and send to the GNSO list my idea of what is involved in this requirements gathering, and then see if the rest of the group, you know, agrees that this is something we should ask staff to do. Does that sound reasonable? Okay. No one says it's unreasonable. Anyone else? Yes.
Mike. Well.
Yes, Mike.
I would just remind you that the SAC has already done some work on this as well, which I think had at least some recommendations about what a proper directory service should look like. And I also want to just echo Chuck and some other comments that it's a really important issue that we should try to push forward as soon as we can.
Yeah, no, I would assume that the SAC set of requirements would be a definite base part of the requirements, and the SAC dealt a lot with the security side of it. And, you know, we have the policy work that we've been doing and that we've been talking about since I've been involved with the council that represents another piece of the capabilities that such a service may or may not need to provide. Okay, so I'll try and write that up again. I'm giving myself way too many assignments. And send it out on the list and you know, we can wordsmith it there and then go on from there. Anyone else wish to comment before moving on? Okay, thank you. New bylaw discussion. This was a staff requested item, and as it is it Rob?
No, actually it's me, Margie.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I wanted to give you a little bit of background on what's been going on with the revisions to the bylaws. And essentially, as part of the GNSO restructure, obviously the bylaws need to be revised to reflect the board approved improvements, and we're talking specifically about Article 10 that deals with the GNSO and then some of the transition articles. And then if you look at the timing, in order to have the new council seated in June, these bylaw revisions would have to be effective prior to Sydney, and this would realistically mean the board meeting in May. So that gives us a lot of work and a short amount of time to get these revisions accomplished. And if you think about the timing, there's also a lot of things that have to happen after the bylaw revisions take place, such as, you know, the charters and other decisions that would be consistent with the bylaws. So ICANN staff, we've been working on a set of recommended draft bylaw revisions to accomplish these improvements. They were drafted to be consistent with the board recommendations with respect to structure and principles, but they were also kind of drafted from the perspective that there needs to be flexibility in the GNSO procedures and to allow for changes that don't require, you know, rigid time rules and rigid rules and time periods. So what we've done is we've moved some of the improvements to something called the GNSO operating rules and procedures instead of the bylaws. And when you look at the document that we'll distribute after this call, you'll see that there's been, you know, some topics that we feel are more appropriate for operating rules and procedures, and that's all, that will be noted in the document that we'll distribute after this meeting. We didn't want to burden the council with a very large document. This particular document is 17 pages long, and it has side-by-side columns so that when you review them, you can see what the current bylaws say, and then side-by-side the proposals to deal with some of the restructuring. We've highlighted the changes in yellow so it's really easy to spot, and we've also included rationale statements and footnotes throughout to talk about some of the additional issues that are raised by the changes. And one of the things that we did as we were going through this process, it was a very long process internally to go through them, and it will probably take the council a bit of time to go through the changes, because the recommendations are pretty high level and cursory, and when you start putting the document into start to document these changes, a lot of assumptions have to be made, and a lot of other ancillary issues have to be addressed. So where we've done that, we've highlighted in footnotes. And just to give you an example of one of them, for example, how to achieve geographic diversity among the counselors. Currently, the geographic diversity requirement is at the constituency constituency level, but now, you know, is it meant to stay there, or is it meant to be at the stakeholder level? These are sort of the issues that, as you read the document, you'll see have been raised, and we've footnoted them for you to review. So we've made initial recommendations, and these are really meant to be a starting point for your discussions, and hopefully it'll facilitate your review. And there's also areas where additional information is needed, such as the transition plan, and I understand that that you guys are working on some sort of transition to deal with how the new council will be seated in June. There's also another item that will be that is unresolved that needs to be addressed, and that's the board approval with respect to board seats 13 and 14. So we've just highlighted that that's still pending. And the last thing I wanted to say was that these bylaws have not been reviewed by the General Counsel's office. We intend to have it circulated to them after the GNSO Council has come up with its recommendations, and that's when we'll get the legal review. So in terms of timing and next steps, if you look back and if you look at the calendar, in order to seat the council in June and to provide, you know, ample time, the board would have to approve these changes in their May meeting. Now, you realize that we need to have a public comment period prior to the May meeting, which really means that the GNSO Council would need to finalize its recommendations by April 16th, which is a really short amount of time. And so I guess the question for the council is, you know, how you intend to accomplish this task. We assume that that your GNSO restructured drafting team will take the initial responsibility, and if that's the way, you know, you'd like to proceed, you know, we can certainly set up conference calls and I can walk through some of the changes in the bylaws, but that's, you know, the timing is fairly short if we want to seat the council in June.
Basically, we've got 3 weeks to review something we haven't seen yet. If I understand correctly, that we have 3 weeks to review, comment on, negotiate, and approve something that we haven't seen yet. And our next meeting happens to be the 16th.
That's right.
Okay.
That's right. And these are, you know, as you start reading them, there's a lot of issues raised by the bylaws. When we started working through this, you know, it's going to take some time to really understand the issues and make decisions.
Any comments, questions?
Yeah, Chuck.
Hello, Philip. Thank you.
And Stephen, please.
Chuck Phillips, Stephen. Go ahead.
And Tony, please.
Okay. Chuck, go ahead.
Okay. So, Margie, thank you very much. Is it reasonable to expect that this document will be sent to us right away?
Yes.
Good. Okay. Secondly, the OSC work team for GNSO operations is working on rules and procedures. And listening to you, it sounds like it'd be very helpful if you or someone else that's been working on this was involved at least in the task of that work team
with regard to the GNSO council rules and procedures that they're that they've already started work on. Who is the I don't know right off the top of my head who the staff support person is for that team. Ray Fassett is the chair of that team. Does anybody on staff know who's supporting that team?
Yeah, Chuck, this is Rob. That's me and Julie Hedlund.
Oh, okay. Now, does it make sense? Can you guys cover this particular aspect with them? And I'm not talking so much about the bylaws revisions as I am. You've obviously, as Margie said, moved some things over into the rules and procedures area as a potential way of handling them, and that is right in sync with something that they're doing. So does it make sense for Margie to be a part of that, or Rob, can you and Julie handle that?
That's something we'll be discussing internally, but we've all been active in the discussion of the bylaw changes, and in fact, we've briefed the work team on this issue in their call this week. We talked about it in detail, and they actually started going through the rules of procedure to begin parsing out the work. I think it's going to be a broader discussion as the council, the steering committee, and the work team have in terms of understanding the timing. I think, as Margie explained, a lot of the bylaws work needs to be done first. Part of our strategy of moving a lot of the procedures off to the rules of procedures is to allow you all more flexibility and to allow some of those more detailed issues to still be discussed and still meet the general time frames that the board is looking at for June.
And I understand all that and support it. I'm just thinking that it'd be a good idea if that work team actually, even though with the understanding that some of this may change once the council sees it and reviews it in 3 weeks, that it'd be good for them to see what you're thinking, at least in terms of some new rules and procedures, sooner than later.
This is Ken Bauer. Can I get in the queue?
Did you want to respond directly to that or just
yes.
to you?
I wanted to respond to that.
Okay, then go ahead, and then I've got Philip, Stefan, and Tony.
Chuck, this is Ken Bauer again. I did a fair amount of the drafting work on these bylaws. I know where all the places are where we made recommendations to move them to council operating rules, and I am in contact with Julie Hedlund, and we have already begun exchanging documents and items so that she can make sure that when she's interfacing with the team that all the items that need to belong in there have been identified. So that task is actually underway, and I'm sure if they need me to participate with that team, I'd be happy to do so with respect to any additional explanations or rationale.
Excellent. And one of my concerns here is that particular work team, as part of the OSC work, has been told that that's one of their top priority items because it'd be very helpful for those rules and procedures, in addition to the bylaws changes, to be in place by June. So thanks a lot.
Thank you. So,
thanks. Two observations and one question. Firstly, I fully support the idea of moving a whole bunch of stuff currently in the bylaws to operating rules and procedures. That makes eminent sense. So that should continue. My second observation is that I think it's about time we all realize that there is so much work to be done. There are so many unresolved issues that the PSC is working on, the OSC and their teams are working on, etc. And all the various things we discussed even today. So the likelihood of June being practical is, in my mind, sinking fast. And I think at some point we need to address that head on and say to the board rather clearly, it ain't going to happen, guys. You need to reconsider. I leave that open for another discussion. My specific question, though, refers to geographical diversity. And I just wanted to check that in the existing draft, and I haven't looked at the text yet, there was a recognition that geographical diversity challenges are going to be different for different constituencies and different stakeholder groups. I'm specifically thinking of the challenge that the board has given the commercial stakeholder group, whereby, in effect, the board has said to us, when they ignored our request to have 9 representatives, they said to us, we expect you to have less people around we therefore expect you to have less geographical diversity than you currently have now. And what we also want to do in having our six representatives is to ensure not only that we have the best stab we can do at geographical diversity, given that restriction that the board has imposed upon us, but we also want to have diversity in terms of the people and the sectors and the skills involved, which is a separate challenge that we will try to address internally. So I would recommend that if it is not currently the case, the bylaws reflect that different stakeholder groups will have different challenges to geographical diversity.
This is Ken Bauer, Aubrey. I can respond to that.
Nick, please.
Without getting into a lot of details, so I don't think we have the time for it. Philip, the answer is yes. We did make an attempt to recognize the differences in geographic diversity requirements based on the different sizes of the stakeholder groups.
Good.
Okay, thank you. Stefan.
Thanks. A comment, really, about how pushed for time this is. This has put us in a situation where we're really so pushed for time that I'm worried on this crucial issue of bylaws that we will just have to speed through it and not get it, not be thorough enough. I have to agree with Philip that it may be time to address the potential problem that we're not going to meet the board's deadline of June to make this transition. Especially if things like this get thrown at us and we have 3 weeks to review something as crucial as the bylaws. I'm trying to be positive here and find solutions rather than just state problems. I just have a general question to Margie or staff on how likely do you think it is that we are able to review this in 3 weeks? And you suggested that this might be done by the drafting team rather than the full council. Is that correct?
Yeah, that is what we suggested. It is doable, but it will take time. We've spent many hours going through these bylaws over the last 2 weeks, and it's not a small task, but it certainly could be done. And we did recommend the restructure team, but it could be the whole council. It's up to you guys. We just thought it'd be more efficient to have it be the drafting team.
But if it was just the drafting team, how would the council then plug into that? In your opinion?
Yeah, the drafting team, if I could jump in, the drafting team allows for more focused work, but that work still has to come before the council to get approved. So using the drafting team makes a lot of sense when you want to have several people that are willing to meet several times a week and work on something. But at a certain point, it has to come to council, and it still needs discussion on something where we need a decision in 3 weeks. Now, maybe in 3 weeks we come up with a motion that sort of says,
well, you know, we need more time, and then that's a different story. But at this point, I don't see how we have time to do drafting team and then council on something that needs to be decided, unless the drafting team can get it done in a week.
That's exactly what I'm saying.
Agreed.
Okay.
Dallin, I'll point out you only have 2 weeks since you have to have things posted a week before.
Well, that's why I only gave the drafting team 1 week.
I see.
Okay, I have Tony. Oh, yeah, definitely not Tony.
Okay, is it me, Avery?
Yes, it is.
Okay. What? I think many of the things that I heard Philip say, I made exactly the same points in Mexico because it was becoming pretty apparent then that this is becoming very tight. And I'm quite concerned when I hear that it's now down to 3 weeks, particularly as for many of us there's a major holiday across that period, so that 2 weeks that was just referred to is probably a bit shorter than 2 weeks. And I think we do have to stand back and take a pragmatic view on this. The other thing is that in terms of the bylaws, there are some very big issues there, and certainly from our constituency, we wouldn't be, or we
we wouldn't want to be placed in a situation where there's an expectation that we're just going to give a nod of head and pass anything through. It's far, far too important for that to happen. In addition to this, to see the new council in Sydney, we would also need to hold new elections within the constituency, and we have strict time requirements set in our bylaws to do that. So the whole thing is already butting right up against the buffers, and I just don't think it's achievable within that time frame, even with the best will and a fair wind.
Thank you. Yeah, I've certainly been looking at it from the time. One other problem we have with needing a new one in Sydney is the whole travel budget issue, which makes it even more complicated. And perhaps that we should talk further on the list on whether we want to draft a note to the board and you know, deal with that in our next meeting about the schedule. But if we're going to do that, then we probably need to spend a little time figuring out what our schedule would be and would need to be so the things were comfortable for after Sydney, because that wouldn't be that much extra time. In other words, so that we didn't end up in the same situation we're in now for a Seoul meeting would mean we'd have to be done within a couple weeks of the Sydney meeting, so that everything could happen in the intermediate time.
This is Tim. Can I get in the queue?
Yes, Tim.
Hello.
Go ahead. I stopped.
I was just curious how, and maybe this isn't the place to answer the question, but I know, I believe it was you that had raised the suggestion that the constituencies might consider just seating the existing council in order to get, you know, the transition complete and then hold elections following that, if at all possible. Is that, can we somehow determine whether that's going to work for each constituency or not, so that we know, you know, whether that's an option? So that would certainly... Well, whether we want to get somebody June or not, I don't know, but that would certainly, you know, impact the time frame that we have to work with.
I think that would be up to each of the stakeholder groups. Tony, was that you wanting to comment?
Yeah, just a quick answer to Tim. The fact that we're reducing the size of the representatives on council, I think that still requires an election, so I don't think you get over that problem.
Have to at least decide who's dropping out.
Just to echo the same thing, it's trivially easy for the greatest trees and the greatest trials, of course, because there's no apparent change. It's a major challenge for absolutely everybody else, so the answer is no.
Okay, I think we obviously have a lot more to discuss on this, and we'll keep that going on the list. And then if we want to make a request about the schedule, we need to think it through on the list and come up with a motion at the next meeting.
And I think it's going to be very helpful to see the bylaws changes as one step in this, but I think the writing's on the wall, so...
I mean, we could read them and have a resounding, aha, yes, they're perfect, but other than that case, I think the writing may be on the wall. Moving to status update. Board update.
Philip, may I just make a suggestion? I've got a slight time pressure, and I wonder if we could possibly take the item on the implementation recommendation team first, and then take the other one subsequently, if that wasn't upset in the video.
Any objection? Okay, go ahead. So we'll start with you're talking about 10.6.3, the GNS?
10.4,
okay. 10.4 implementation recommendation. Oh, okay, certainly. Okay, who wants to speak to that one? That's update on that one. Is that Christina?
I can. I wasn't sure whether this... Oh, well, I'll go ahead.
I mean, as far as I can tell, really, this is just a status update to inform everyone of what's going on. We're, you know, it's not a GNSO thing that we're doing, but we certainly care.
Okay. The IRT has been convened. It consists of 17 participants with reasonably good geographical diversity. Unfortunately, we were not able to find any participants who had the time to participate from the African region. We had our first meeting yesterday, and have been laying out just procedural issues and frankly dealing with a lot of administrative issues in terms of meetings and calls, et cetera, and the like. The first face-to-face meeting is scheduled for April 1st and 2nd in Washington, D.C., and the second face-to-face meeting is scheduled for, I believe, May 11th through 13th in San Francisco. And at this point, it is our expectations and plan to meet the time frame set out in the board resolution. I do know that a letter was sent by Steve Metalis, president of the IPC constituency, IPC heads of all the other constituencies, and I believe the ALAC and the GAC and the FSAC, I think, inviting them to, consistent with the resolution, to submit any additional ideas or proposals or solutions that either the constituencies or advisory committees as a whole had endorsed, or in the alternative that individual members or participants had. I am not on the mailing list to get those. Those are going to a kind of centralized team, so I don't have a very good sense as to how many of those have been received at this point. But the IPC put together a team that went through every single public comment and put together a very elaborate matrix of comments that contain proposals or suggestions for solutions to these trademark issues.
Christina, it's Alan. Could we get a list of who's on the group?
The list has been posted on the IPC website. I have it in front of me. I can read it to you if you want.
No, if it's posted.
Okay. I think it's, I don't know if it's going up on the ICANN site or if there will be a link from the ICANN site to the version on the IPC site. But if you go to the IPC site and click on the news link, you'll see it there.
Christina, this is Kurt. It's going to be posted on the ICANN site probably this afternoon.
Okay.
Any other questions? Thank you, Christina. Okay. At this point, I'll go back up to the beginning if there are no other shifting requests. Okay. Board update, is there anything new since Mexico City?
No, there isn't. At the board meets next April 23rd.
So in other words, we at our April 16th will actually almost be in time to get something into that meeting if it's important.
Yes.
Thank you. Okay, I think on these updates, if there's nothing new, are there any questions for Denise on board activities? Okay, Olga, CCNSO?
Yes, there's a new member of the CCNSO, it's Montserrat. I already sent this information to the list, but just in case you didn't read it. And also, there's a resolution of the CCNSO Council in respect to IDN CCTLDs delegated under fast track. I don't know if you want me to go through all text, but it establishes some financial contributions to ICANN from the IDN CCTLDs and other relationships between ICANN and the IDN CCTLD manager. I already sent it to the list. If you want, I can.
No, I don't think you need to go through it, but if there are any questions? No questions, no.
That's all.
And okay.
Also,
and as
Portugal,
I say, if,
sorry, Portugal is in the process of being part of the CCNSO, but not yet confirmed.
Okay, great. Thank you. And was it you or Zahid that would do the geographical region?
Oh, well, we have been asked by Dave if we could fill this template that I already sent from the council. We haven't found with Zahid and with Robert much more information than some reference references in the bylaws. I have already included them in the, and also for non-com appointees in relation with non-com rules for regions. I already included this information in the template. If there is something that we should consider in relation with constituencies, please let me know, and we can add it to the template. We haven't had a new meeting yet with this group.
Okay, thank you. Any questions? Okay, we already covered 10-4, 10-5 on the Joint GNSO, CCNSO group. Chris Despain and I have not done anything. Yet. 10-6-1.
Oh, this is Edmund.
Oh, Edmund, yes.
Yeah, on 10-5, I wonder if this is the right place to raise this item. I sort of talked about the idea in GTLD Fast Track in the same breath as this when we first brought it up. So I did send around a note at the list. I was wondering if you know whether the two items are somewhat related, and you know some progress. And how do we move forward on some of those things?
I mean, how do we move forward on commenting on IBM Fast Track, or are you speaking specifically of the GTLD Fast Track proposal?
Yes, I'm speaking specifically about the GTLD.
Okay, no, I think that would be a separate item, and I think that, you know, that would be its own agenda item on a meeting if you're making a specific proposal at that point. I think that there's discussion on the list, and I think that's probably a good beginning for it. But I think if you have a specific proposal, then we should probably put together a idea of exactly what you think we should do, and then we should have a discussion and a vote on it. Does that make sense?
Sure. I guess the question then is, it seems like there are people interested in talking about it from discussion. Or you know people who may have concerns about it, but you know is it possible to convene some sort of a drafting team or something that would work both on this and coordinating with the CCNSO potentially on this particular subject? Or you still think it should be separate?
I think the two are separate. I'd be interested in hearing
okay.
what other people say. I think that once we got a little further with that, that might be one topic that we'd want to throw into that list. But I think the, you know, but perhaps you're right. It's worth talking about some more. I actually don't know.
Okay, so I guess the question then now moves is more directed towards potentially putting together some sort of a drafting team to look into the issue. Is that something that...
Yeah, at this point, yeah, I think if there are several people that want to work with you on putting together that would be a good thing to do, and a space could be established for that. To do that. Is there any objection to doing that? Hearing no objection, I mean, and so what I would suggest is that, you know, we put together a team that you're obviously leading and basically, you know, get some volunteers of people who are interested in working with you on making a proposal on that.
Okay, I guess I'll ask Glenn.
Yeah.
I'll send, yeah.
Right, we
can,
you know, set up the same wiki space and mailing list for it and, you know, see what develops and come up with a proposal that then the council can look at as a whole.
Okay.
Okay. Thanks. Going through Fast Flux is basically been trying to meet, I know I'd mentioned Marika, but I'll jump in and she can add, has been having difficulty. I guess we had two partial meetings in the last 2 weeks. I wasn't able to make either of them, but basically what the group needs to do now is going through all of the comments, decide how to alter and finalize the final report. And so that's basically what's on its plate at the moment. And I don't know if either Mike or Marika wants to add anything to what I just said.
This is Marika, maybe just to add, the group will be looking as well if there are any recommendations they can make to the council that there is consensus on. It's another big issue they need to discuss.
Okay. Yes, thank you. Anyone, Registration Abuse Policies Working Group, is that's Mike, right? Or is it, who would like to comment on that one?
This is Christina. I can, as I indicated on the list, just as a threshold matter,
I am a member of the IRT and simply don't have the time to participate now in both the IRT and that working group. So not only will I be resigning from the working group, but I think we'll also need to select a new liaison. I think that's been taken care of by the list. In addition to the meeting that was held in Mexico City, there was a meeting, I believe, a week ago, Monday on the 16th, and that meetings will be held, I believe, every 2 weeks for an hour and a half. A number of action items were identified, such as putting down, identifying the scope of the 90-day milestone, determining whether there are any other activities within ICANN, that policy activities that are dependent on the working group, and if so, what those are, to start putting together a list of relevant definitions and to identify a scope, at least initially, on registration abuses that had been identified or raised either at the Mexico City meeting session or before that time.
Okay, thank you. So yeah, we did, there was a little bit of discussion on the list about the liaison, and basically we had some shifting around and volunteering where Mike was basically offering to continue with Fast Flux and take over this one, especially since there was an overlap between them, and that the IRTP working group would then go to, that Tim would be the liaison on that one. And I haven't seen any objection to that on the list. Is there any objection to proceeding in that manner? Okay, there. Good. Okay, going back to the agenda, we had drafting teams, we have travel policy drafting team, travel database for Sydney. In addition to that, what's come up in the last week was the discussion about putting together a motion, and this would be in time for the next meeting, for how to use the balance of the DNSO funds for that, and the travel group, I think, has already started working on that. Olga, I don't know what you'd like to add to the travel policy drafting team update.
Yes, on the regarding the Sydney meeting, what we have requested to the council list now is each constituency can tell us which is the need for what, the need of funds that they are requesting for traveling to Sydney, and we included the remaining funds counting each person as an individual, not money, as a reference. I received during the last 2 hours 3 or 4 responses, which I really appreciate, and I will be glad to receive more and then to summarize all the information and review it with the drafting team and see if we can provide some ideas for travel funds for Sydney. And then there is a text that we have prepared and we have already circulated through the council list about what the GNSO is requesting from Sydney on for the future. We're requesting basically funds for all the council members, and we have drafted some arguments for that, some ground for that. We have not received a lot of feedback, so I guess you agree with that. And I was thinking about if just now, 10 minutes ago, if we could, it could be a good idea to maybe put some of these comments, all of them, part of them, in the public comment period that has been recently opened in relation with travel funds and travel policies for ICANN.
Okay, thank you. So, what action do we need to take on that report? We've already approved it, essentially, haven't we?
Well, there were not many comments on the list. So
okay, but we haven't actually had a formal council decision on it.
No. We had some discussions in the drafting team if we should make a motion to send it to the constituencies or. And it seems that it doesn't make sense. So perhaps we should send it to the ICANN authorities or staff or whatever, or perhaps we could send some comments to the public comment space. That we haven't decided.
Okay, so in other words, the drafting team needs to decide whether it's presenting a motion to the council or whether it actually wants to go out for public comment. Now,
yes.
In the meantime, there's the public comment on next year's travel policy, so we need to make sure that anything we do is timed within that.
Yes, you're right.
So, and that, I don't have it in front of me, but that public comment period ends, I don't remember when it ends, but less than 21 days from now. So by our next meeting, I expect.
Aubrey, I have a question.
Certainly.
Olga was talking about the drafting team's recommendations for next year beyond Sydney. Has something been distributed broader than just the drafting team's list on that? Because I don't recall seeing it.
Mm-hmm. No, we sent it to the list last week. I can.
To what list?
To the GNSO Council.
Yeah, to the council list.
Okay.
But I can resend it to the list if you want, or just to you, Chuck.
I'd appreciate you sending it to me.
Sure.
For some reason, I don't recall seeing it, but maybe it's because I've been going through too many emails.
We should check and confirm that it went to the list. I mean,
what
I would recommend is that it be discussed in the constituencies and that we look at taking a vote on it at the next meeting, because that will coincide. Well, the public comment period ends on the 24th of April. So if we are going to make a GNSO council statement in response to that comment period, we would need to decide on our statement at our next meeting or very shortly thereafter. One of those, you know, if we can't decide on in the next meeting, then doing the quick wordsmithing with the one-day period. But it'd be better if we could actually decide on something on the 16th. So I would suggest taking the procedure of it's been distributed, it should be, you know, discussed in the constituencies, and they should come back. I don't personally think that we would need an additional public comment period when there's already a public comment period ongoing on the travel policy in general. But I think it would be good to have the constituencies review it and then have the representatives from the constituencies able to take a vote at our next meeting.
Okay, so you're suggesting, Avery, that I recirculate the text in the council list again?
If it's not on the council list, I would suggest that we confirm that it was distributed on the list. I've seen it on the other list, so I can't swear that I saw it on the council list.
Yeah.
But we should confirm from the archive that it's in there. Perhaps send out a mail to everybody telling them what message is in there so anybody that's missed it can find it, and then prepare a motion, you know, recommend that everybody take it to their constituencies for discussion and prepare a motion in time for the next meeting.
Okay, and the idea of the motion would be to use this text for the public comment? Or
exactly.
Okay.
Or any other motion that the group wants to make, but that would be the general idea. Any other comment on this?
Aubrey, it's Christina. Before we move on to the next topic, I have actually a question for staff relating to travel support.
Please.
As I indicated in Mexico, and at least from what's on the list, I think the NCUC may have a similar issue. The IPC has a structural problem with identifying persons for travel support by April 6th, because we amended our bylaws so that instead of having elections for 2 seats last November, those elections will happen within 30 days of when the new council is seated, which means that we have not yet had those elections. I haven't had really any success in getting my inquiry as to whether we have any flexibility there to the right person, so I'm hoping that perhaps someone on staff who's on the call could tell me who I need to be directing my request to.
This is Denise, and Kevin Wilson is the person, and I'll talk to him for you and follow up. He'll follow up on email.
Okay. Thanks very much, Denise. I appreciate it.
Okay, thank you. Okay, anyone else on travel policy?
Well, Aubrey, along that same line, one of the problems that we have is that if, in fact, there are delays to seating the bicameral council, that has a direct impact on Christina's question as well as for a lot of other people.
I'm not sure
how we deal with that, but it's a real issue.
It most definitely does. And given that our next meeting is after the deadline, though, the question of flexibility remains because we won't know whether, you know, an election is necessary immediately because we're following through on the schedule, or we are making a request for a delay in the schedule until our next meeting at the earliest. But the deadline is already next week. So the question for flexibility, I think, remains. Is that correct?
Yes,
mm-hmm.
It is.
It's just that we're not quite sure what we're being flexible about yet, except that we're being late, that basically we're neither in a situation where the IPC can say, oh, elections aren't going to happen in time for Sydney, therefore we're staying with our current council members.
It almost seems like that might be the best decision at this point in time, because I think the chances are very high we're going to have to do that, and it would remove a lot of the unknowns if we assumed at least a month delay in seating the council. It might be more.
Average, Alan, it might be useful if the IPC says whether the issue is the names of the people or the number of people.
It's the names.
Because they're asking specific, you know.
Right.
No, I understand, but it needed to be said.
Yeah. Okay, moving quickly through the response to the IDN CCTLD fast track. I see that during the meeting, I guess a draft was sent out by Edmund. I have obviously not had a chance to look at it. The comment period closing April 6th means that we have to do this online. So I would recommend, Edmund, I don't know if you want to say a few words about this now, but I would recommend that everybody read it, and then we'll do one of the online, you know, 48-hour, I think we have time for 48-hour, yeah, we do, 48-hour review cycle for sending something in as a comment. Edmund, did you want to comment?
Sure, I can just quickly talk about it. It's really based on what we discussed in Mexico in the wrap-up meeting. I highlighted three points that I thought were good progress in the IDN CCTLD fast-track implementation plan, one of which is the addition of considering variants for IDN TLDs. The other one is the identification of the need for formalizing relationship between ICANN and the IDN CCTLD manager, and the third one being the recognition that financial contribution should be required from IDN CCTLD managers to offset its program costs. Those are basically taken out from the revision 2 of the IDN CCTLD fast track implementation plan. And then I ended with the reiterating the resolution we had earlier in the year about the subject, about the timing of the IDN CCTLDs and IDN GTLDs, and basically the two of the items that I highlighted.
Okay, thank you. What I will do is ask everyone to read it, and then I will initiate and then discuss it on the list if there are any issues. If the document has been stable as of Monday morning, I'll do a 48-hour call on it. At that point, following the same practice before, as, you know, if there are changes of a substantive nature made, then the call continues at least 24 hours from that substantive change until we've gotten, you know, 48 plus 24 of stable document without comment. Is that okay? Any objection? Okay. Thank you, Edmund, and Okay, GNSO improvement work teams. There were a quarter after the hour, but some quick status on PPSC. Who would give that? Or basically
the PPSC hasn't met, and the PPSC is going to meet in early April, and they're essentially letting the two work teams, the working groups work team and the CDP work team, meet, and just I think they're planning to meet once monthly or so, but that follow-up meeting hasn't occurred.
Okay, and both of the work teams, I've noticed, are working and progressing at some rate or other. As far as I could tell, it's difficult to tell how quickly they're moving. How about the OSD?
Aubrey, I think the teams are proceeding, but the one I want to highlight is the one I already talked about, and that's the GNSO Council Operations Work Team. There's very minimal participation on that work team, and it's really critical because that's the one that's going to be working on the rules and procedures that Margie talked about and that I commented on, as well as other things in terms of GNSO functioning. And there's some things that they need to get done in fairly short order, especially the rules and procedures. So it would be, I really would appreciate it if, and I know that Ray Fassett would, because he requested that from me as chair of the OSC, that we plug this and try and get some people. And it'd be really good to get some people who've had some experience with the way that council and GNSO has operated in the past, but it doesn't have to be restricted to that. So if any constituencies have not found a volunteer for that particular team, please do so, because it's a really important area that's going to affect us for years to come.
Okay, thank you.
Can I ask a follow-up question on that?
Sure, go ahead.
It sure seems like a lot of that stuff seems covered by what we're doing in the PPSC also, or the PDP work team. So,
no, probably not, Mike.
No?
No, this is more operational procedures for the way the council operates. You know, Glenn puts at the beginning of every one of our meeting agendas a reference to the rules and procedures. Those need to be totally revamped to fit the bicameral model. So that doesn't really have anything to do with the PDP details itself. And there are other operational areas for the council, some of which may kind of fall out of the restructuring that we do, but it's really totally separate from the PDP work, although certainly there's connections in all of these work teams.
Any other comments?
Yeah, this is Ken Bauer. Just a follow-up on Chuck's comment. There are 17 separate sections in the GNSO operating rules. Not all of them have to be dealt with between now and the seating of the council, but certainly those that deal with things like the administration and rules and counting and mechanisms and tools around bicameral voting, that will all need to be fleshed out a bit ahead of time.
And things like a quorum, which is going to be quite different under the new model and so forth. So it's things like that, Mike. I hope that helps.
It does a little. Thanks, Chuck.
Okay. Any other questions on OSC? Okay, restructuring group. As people have probably noticed, based on the discussions we had in Mexico City, a drafting team is put together that basically consists of everyone that's on, all the council members, plus others that have either indicated an interest or, in the case of a few people who were chairs of constituencies, were stuck on just because I felt they should be stuck on, so that they could, you know, see what was going on in terms of the restructuring. So there's a list. I don't know if Rob wants to speak to the list that's been put out. There's basically a list of the work items that's being discussed, and there's been a little bit of conversation in the last 2 days about how to resolve a lot of these issues. Many of the issues would probably get packaged in a motion that would be brought to the council. I don't know if Rob or anyone else would like to add to what I said.
Thanks, Aubrey. This is Rob. My one comment would be that you, Philip, and Chuck have had a very interesting, useful dialogue just over the last 24 hours, and I recommend that all other council members take a look at that and provide their opinions on that that discussion.
Yeah, it would be really good to hear what other people said, because we're jumping to conclusions rather quickly. And of course, that's a good thing. But, okay, any other questions or comments on the restructuring group? Okay. Last thing, is there any other business that we need to deal with in this meeting? No, in which case I thank you all for participating in this lengthy and simple meeting, and talk to you all online. The more we do online, the less we need to do in conversation. So hopefully we can get some of these things going well online. Thank you, and be well.
Thanks, Aubrey.
Thanks, Aubrey.
Thanks, Aubrey.